You're with Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome aboard. It is Thursday evening here on the East Coast of the United States, and we're about to welcome in a very familiar voice, of course, to TNT Radio, and that would be our own Mark Morano, founder of ClimateDepot.com. And you could hear a show right here on TNT Radio every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And he's also the author of a really important and great new book. It's called The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. And he's got Sebastian Gorka doing a foreword, and he's got all kinds of Mark Levin and people with reviews and praise for the book on the back. And hey, Mark, really, congratulations. This is a great piece of work.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, this was a year and a half in the making, and the timing is seemingly unbelievable, as the Great Reset is now upon us. We're living through it. It's not some vague theory about what could, might, may happen.
No, you're absolutely right. And when you talk about the Great Reset, I mean, it is so widespread. I mean, this is their goal on every single issue, everything you could think of. The left is out there with the media, of course, and who is part of the left, to try to redefine. They redefine words, they redefine terms. And if there's a storm, but bringing it back to climate change, if there's a storm or a drought somewhere, oh, look, this is the proof. This is the proof we need. Biden said at the UN just the other day, we're running out of time, which is their great mantra. So, I mean, but it's never been worse, never been worse.
Yeah, no, this is, and here's how you look at it. When I say it's happening now, first of all, the slogan of Vladimir Lenin was the worse, the better, because the more chaos you get, the more chance you have to impose your revolutionary agenda, because people are, you soften them up and you break them down. But basically, we're seeing the intentional collapse of our energy system. And we're seeing that in a million different ways. Europe is now, they're saying that firewood is the new gold in Europe. And energy prices in some areas have gone up 1,000%. By the way, Massachusetts just tonight, 64% increase year to year, they're announcing by a Massachusetts utility for electricity. So they're intentionally collapsing energy, intentionally collapsing our transportation, banning gas-powered cars, intentionally collapsing our food supply, banning nitrogen, high-yield agriculture for global warming concerns, and they're trying to ban meat in agriculture. The Netherlands is all about, that's Europe's number one meat exporter. They're trying to close that down, try to make meat rare, expensive, shortages. They're collapsing our First Amendment, because big tech censorship is government censorship. It's a collusion between government and private companies. And we saw that with the Freedom of Information. So all of this is happening. It's not theoretical. It's here. No one voted for any of this. We didn't vote to end the gas-powered car directly. We didn't vote for lockdowns. We didn't vote to end meat eating. We didn't vote for energy shortages. Not directly. Of course, by voting for the green agenda, you voted for that. But people were told it was going to be painless and it was going to be wonderful and great. So people were duped on that. But this is what we're living through. Intentional collapse, and then they want to build it back up, build back better in a sustainable UN-inspired World Economic Forum vision.
Oh, and if you listen to Biden's speech at the UN, he was all about globalism. He wants more countries on the Security Council. He wants more countries involved in this. He wants, UN mandates here and there. I mean, he was just on and on and on. So how do we peacefully, of course, fight back? I mean, see, if Republicans would say, on a daily basis, I mean, I get a kick out of it. Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader of the House, now all of a sudden tomorrow he's going to have a big press conference and they're going to put forth an agenda. They're going to talk about policies. Like, wow, where have you been for the last like 6 months? I mean, if they would say what you just said and what I say here every night, if they would say that every day and just point out really what's obvious and common sense to the American voter, they'd have a cakewalk. But they don't do it.
It's amazing. And Kevin McCarthy is particularly bad when it comes to issues on climate. He is one of these Republicans who will come out and say, yes, it's a problem. Yes, we need a solution. We need carbon capture. We need solar and wind investments. No amount of money. They're offended by spending on it. They concede the entire narrative. They're basically supporting Green New Deal light when it comes to this stuff. And this is the state. They were silent in Republican leadership on lockdowns, on vaccine mandates. And now you're right. Here we are coming into October before the election, and they now finally have announced some sort of an agenda. We'll see what it is. But I can't imagine that they get it. The problem is, you said, how to fight back. Well, first of all, the whole thing that people need to understand is this happened because of COVID. In other words, these plans were always there. You'd heard of the New World Order when George H.W. Bush was president, and you heard of the Trilateral Commission and all this going back the 1970s. And there's always been sort of this idea of getting rid of national sovereignty and, you know, the central planning of some sort. However, what happened here that really make this radical was, first of all, the green agenda has been at play. And what happened with COVID-19 in March 2020 with the lockdowns, when they did those lockdowns, emergency powers, that was the ultimate sort of activated. I said it's like the old seahorses, sea monkeys you could order in the mail in the 1960s and 70s, and you'd add water and they came to life. That COVID lockdowns and the emergency declaration were the activating agent. And this allowed the once free West to be operated like a Chinese one party state, where they could just have mayors, governors issue stay at home orders, cancel church services, close business, cancel schools, cancel weddings, funerals, impose curfews. But hey, Walmart was open. So that's what they fell in love with, that power. And 2 months after, World Economic Forum announced, we need a great reset. A rare, narrow window of opportunity is open. We need to reset capitalism and build back better. And that's exactly, since March 2020, that's what's been happening. All of this collapse has happened almost at once. Supply chain, inflation, overspending, debt, the shortages. And then, of course, they're piling on now with banning gas-powered cars in California and 17 states triggering that. We're looking at fall. We're going to be like Cuba now, with a bunch of old vintage cars. The vintage car capital of the world is going to move to the United States. And then also, we're going to be like East Germany is the other example I give, where the government said you can only buy one government-approved car, the crappy East German Trabant. Is what they used to sell, and people would be on waiting lists for 5 years. Well, there's no way electric cars could ever replace gas on these timescales. You couldn't even do the rare earth mining on any timescale to meet up with it. And they know that. This is Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake, but this time it's let them ride the city bus or let them ride mass transit. So the way to fight back is we have to resist at every level. And that's what I devote the whole last chapter to.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think people should read it for themselves. And it's interesting you mentioned about, let them, Marie Antoinette. And when I heard Buttigieg, the man who was, he could be president, Buttigieg saying that, the way to save money on gas is to buy an electric car. It's like, you're homeless. Well, why don't you buy a house? You know, I mean, they just don't get it. And they come out and say, especially our Secretary of Energy, she comes out and says, this is the goal. This is where we're headed. Do you remember Barack Obama when he was, I think, running the first time or was serving? And he said, I remember playing this bite so many times. He said, by definition, electric rates are going to soar under my policies. I mean, now he's seeing his desires back then come to fruition now.
Yes. I mean, that's what I always say. People are like, well, could you believe this? Or electricity, look at gas price. Like, these are not unintended consequences. You're right. Obama said they will necessarily skyrocket. A former Obama official just said in March of this year, this is good news for the green agenda, high energy prices. And the White House is doubling down on failure. They think it's a great opportunity because, remember, collapse, chaos is a great time to impose your agenda. In fact, the World Economic Forum today, I posted at Climate Depot, they're actually saying openly now that COVID-19 lockdowns were a test of social, essentially social obedience, or just social test, and that we passed it because we were mostly obedient to it. And therefore, they want to now start monitoring track and trace carbon footprints based on the fact that people put up with all of the COVID theater and nonsense and lockdowns and social distancing and mandates.
We will be China. You'll get a scorecard. We will be China.
Yes. And that's an important point, because in the book, I detail how for everyone from Justin Trudeau, who said he had great admiration for China's basic dictatorship, to the UN climate chief, Cristina Figueres, who said China's is doing it right and there's a messiness of democracy. China can impose what they need to Tom Friedman, to Obama administration officials. Though all of this progressive and left wing have praised China's one party rule for decades. Lockdowns and emergency powers of COVID gave them that ability. You didn't need Congress. You didn't need city council. You didn't need House of Representatives. You didn't need Board of Supervisors. They were just drunk with power. And they're like, wow, now we know why China loved this so much. You know, and they don't want to let it go. That's why Joe Biden, according to the Associated Press, Washington Post, about to declare a national climate emergency, will give him 140 or 130 additional new presidential powers, wartime-like powers. It also extend to mayors, governors, and we're talking things like odd-even days in cities, thermostat controls, which you've already seen happening in Colorado by the utilities. Under a climate emergency, anything goes. And by the way, Steve, it's a permanent emergency because there's no criteria by which they'll ever declare climate crisis has been solved.
It is so, so scary. We're talking to Mark Morano, founder of ClimateDepot.com, TNT radio host and author of The Great Reset. You know, to simplify this and take this just to the weather for a second, I've always been amazed whenever, you know, here I live in the New York area my whole life. And whenever it seems like whenever I see a record that's been broken, a heat record, okay, that heat record was set in the 1930s, in the 18 somethings, in the, you know, way before we had this carbon footprint with air conditioners and big cars and all this kind of stuff. And I say, well, why was it so hot back then? And of course, doing some research and all, you know, the Dust Bowl of the 30s, the hottest summers on record in the United States, 1930 to I think 1935 or six, if I'm correct. So records were set all over the country in those years. And people don't ask questions. They don't look at that and say, well, wait a minute, why was it so hot then? Was, you know, and what happened after that? Well, it got cold to the point where they predicted an ice age, and now it's getting warm again. But people don't they don't question that.
No, they don't. In fact, I tell people now, if you go to the Biden administration, yes, I said the Biden administration's EPA website, they show you the chart you just described, Steve. It shows the 1930s state record, city heat waves and temperatures about 10 times higher than anything before or since over the last 100 years, that the 1930s reigned supreme in terms of heat waves. So you could draw a chart in the United, and this is for continental US, and you could show a radical drop in heat waves. So how did the Biden administration handle this chart? They did an EPA assessment where they said heat waves have dramatically increased since 1960. Now, following what you just said, the temperature dropped after the 1940s into the 50s. And by the 60s and 70s, it got really cool and they were worried about the coming ice age. So what the Biden administration's EPA did is they picked 1960 as their start point to show an enhanced warming trend of heat waves, but ignored the 1930s because they didn't want to go back that far and show that, that actually we've had a dramatic drop in heat waves in the United States. That's the kind of nonsense that they play with in statistics. And furthermore, there's this professor in Texas A&M named Andrew Dessler, who's publicly stated that we need to get rid of the 1930s heat wave record. He wants to adjust the numbers and make them go away because it's inconvenient for the narrative. We know they're serious because they already did this with the medieval warm period. First UN report showed the medieval warm period much warmer than current temperatures of the 20th century, 21st century. And what did they do? The second report, the third report, they wiped it out. They had scientists, and we actually had one testify in the Senate saying he got emails saying we have to get rid of the medieval warm period. This is about 1500, 1300 AD when the Greenland and Vikings were doing settlements. And they did. They came out with a new chart, revised past temperatures, and based on very corrupt statistics, and the medieval warm period was gone. So do not be surprised if in the next year or two that 1930s heat waves no longer exist in official government data.
Oh, nothing would surprise me. I want you to hear one soundbite before I let you go. This was the other day, one of the squad members, Rashida Tlaib, was at a congressional hearing with bank CEOs, and she was talking about, of course, climate change, and she wanted answers from all the CEOs on a specific question. And here's her exchange with the CEO of J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon. This is S1.
Do you know what the International Energy Agency has said is required to meet our global 2015 net zero targets of limiting global temperature rise to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.5 degrees Celsius? So no new fossil fuel production starting today. That's like zero. So I would like to ask all of you and go down the list, because again, you all have agreed to doing this. Please answer with a simple yes or no. Does your bank have a policy against funding new oil and gas products? Mr. Dimon.
Absolutely not. And that would be the road to hell for America.
The road to hell for America. Good for him.
Yes, that's one of the few. I mean, we're in an insane situation. In fact, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal and I've been thinking of doing this, but thank God some historian did it and probably did it much better than I could have done. But they did a comparison of Chairman Mao and China's great leap forward in the late 1950s, his agricultural reforms, and they were trying to keep up with steamboating, with steel and beat Europe at steel. They had the exact same thing where they had all these mandates, timetables for agricultural production, and people had to like meet arbitrary deadlines and they couldn't do it. So they started essentially fudging the numbers, and then they ended up creating a famine and millions of people died, up to 45 million. We're in a situation now where because of these insane goals, we're going to limit these UN summits where they talk about the future of the earth. The world leaders stand up there. I will limit the earth to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Another one stands up. I'll do it to 1 degree. They actually believe that they will limit the earth to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Another one stands up. I'll do it to 1 degree. They actually believe that they can make some climate pledge at a UN platform and alter the temperature. But that leads down into this insane policy where he's the exception, that banker you just played there, because the other ones go along with this, just like they did during China's Great Leap Forward, when people were forced to say, come up with these arbitrary demands on agriculture that led to famines. We're doing the same thing now that are leading to energy crisis. It's bonkers, and it's just insane. And this is the whole problem. We need people to start standing up. That was a great example you just played, but the problem is most of the financial institutions have been corrupted, bought out, intimidated with things like environment, social governance, defunding the entire energy sector as we speak. But it's also extending now. Visa's going to start monitoring gun purchases.
You took the words right. I was just about to say it's all climate change, but now Visa, I believe all the credit card companies, if you purchase any kind of gun, it's going to go on a list. It's going to be reported. And that's why I say I was, if I do anything with my gun, it'll be with cash. But I could do that. Most people probably can't.
Well, they're devaluing the currency. And in my book, I have a big component about the digital bank central currencies, central bank digital currencies. Joe Biden did an executive order earlier this year. The Bank of England is on record as saying they want to have a programmable currency that literally government will decide what you can spend it on, and you can only buy what the government deems sensible. It'll be kind of like food stamps with restrictions.
Oh,
so the government may say you can't buy a hamburger, you can't get gas for your car, you've already got too much, you can't buy a gun. We are very close. We already saw this happen with Justin Trudeau in Canada, where they cut off the
truckers,
protesters.
Yeah.
They cut off the access to their own money. All they did was make a few phone calls to the banks, and they were more than happy to do a Mussolini-style fascism and collude with the government. That's how quickly our corporations are to sell us out.
Yep. Well, Mark, if we're all domestic terrorists, then it makes sense.
Yes.
They
set. That's the key. That's the key to how to fight back. Is the reason you triggered it when you said domestic terrorists. The school board in my book, I detail how at the lowest rung of politics is where we had the biggest impact. School board parents showing up, angry parents and fighting the school boards, willing to get arrested, teachers resigning, standing up to these against the trans agenda, against critical race, against COVID theater masking. That toppled Terry McAuliffe and the Democrat machine in Virginia, which no one thought possible. It's in a couple other states, and especially school board elections, the national Democrats were terrified. And I quote in the book, the New York Times, it says after these elections, they did focus groups and realized they had to change. And they announced that the science changed and they stopped vax and mask mandates in every city from San Francisco, L.A., Baltimore, Washington, New York, and everything in between because of those elections spurred by parents at school. So that's how you affect change. Yeah. You've got to topple the system, resist at every level, no masks, no social distancing, don't comply with lockdowns, don't comply with car bans. This is how you do it, and demand politicians and yourself. Do we have to change narratives? Well, I was just looking at a Marriott hotel, and it was telling you on the website carbon footprint. I mean, at some point we have to figure out a way to just it's all garbage. It's all this nonsense that they tell you. We have to change the narrative. We can no longer accept their premises on this stuff.
Well, if we did change the narrative, and if we did it with leadership, the political leadership in this country, the Republican political leadership on every issue, we would win on every issue that you brought up. And abortion is another one. We would have the majority of the people in this country behind agreeing with you and me. They just don't do it. Mark, this is a very important book, and don't think it's just about climate, folks. I think you get the correct impression that it's about a lot more than that. And it's very important that you go out and read The Great Reset by Mark Morano and tune in every Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern, right here on TNT Radio and hear Mark. Mark, I thank you. I thank you for helping me get involved with TNT. I'll always be in your debt for that. And good talking to you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
Take care. Mark Morano, ladies and gentlemen, climatedepot.com and climatehustle2, the number 2, .com as well. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to do our thing that we usually do. Lots of topics and lots of sound and all that kind of stuff right here. This is Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Jason Olborn.
The CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices met for 8 hours on September the 1st, 2022, and authorized the untested boosters 13 votes to one. So CDC Director Rochelle Walensky endorsed the recommendation later that evening. Pfizer's new booster is a bivalent injection targeting Omicron subvariants BA4 and BA5, which are the two currently in circulation, whilst Moderna's bivalent shot targets the already extinct Wuhan strain and Omicron's subvariant BA1. Of course it does. Pfizer's bivalent booster was tested on a total of 8 mice. 8! And they only checked antibody levels, even though antibody levels cannot tell you whether the shot actually protects against infection and symptomatic and or serious illness. And Moderna refused to even announce how many mice it tested its vaccines on.
Jason Olborn and Jason Q. Citizen on TNT Radio.
The ones that matter most are the children. There is a special place in South Dakota, a place of hope, love, safety, and opportunity for Native American children. This place is St. Joseph's Indian School. Here, we preserve traditions, provide Lakota kids a safe place to learn, attend to the mind, body, heart, and spirit of every child in our care.
As a father, I feel very good about leaving my kids here, and they have way more opportunities here.
I can come on campus and I can feel the good vibes, and the children, they can really grow.
Together, we are giving Lakota children brighter futures and a proud connection to their past. To learn more, go to helplakotakids.org today.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, that would be me. And welcome back, everybody. We mentioned at the end there with Mark, who I've known for years, interviewed him on so many of my different shows over the years, and really a great guy. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go into detail, but he was instrumental in directing me towards TNT Radio. And I'm very thankful for that, obviously. So we mentioned abortion at the very end of the segment. And I got to tell you, newsbusters.org put out a video, which to me is wow. From the Today Show, NBC, and did they go far in making the case against abortion unintentionally, unbeknownst to them. By the way, how do you spell that, unbeknownst? I have no clue. But unbeknownst to them, they made the case against abortion. They made the case that the babies in the womb are babies, or let's just say the fetuses in the womb are babies, are real live babies. They showed pictures. They showed facial expressions. And I can't show you the pictures right here and now, but somebody did a test and they fed them the mother ate kale. And when the mother ate kale, the vegetable kale, like the baby made a bad face, and another mother or the same mother, I don't know, later ate something that nice and delicious, and the baby smiled. And so I want you to hear this, but Newsbusters was shocked. When I read it, I couldn't believe what I was looking at and reading. I mean, don't they know what they did? They showed what everybody with a brain knows, because medical science has come so far, and the sonograms and everything else, we know, everybody knows that it's a baby in there. A real live baby. And with arms and legs and fingers as it develops, a baby. So when they say the woman's body, you can't tell a woman what to do with her body. It's women's health care. What about the baby? What about the baby? Creeps. So anyway, this is the Today Show. It's from Thursday's Today Show. This is some woman named Chanel Jones. I hope I'm pronouncing the first name correctly. I don't know who she is. She's talking here first. And just as they're looking at the pictures I just described, here's cut S2.
Some amazing baby faces. Look at this. So researchers in Britain wanted to know if babies in the womb react when the mom ingests a flavor of food.
How do you like that? Babies. Babies in the womb. Babies. So when you kill them, what are you doing? You're killing the baby, the unborn, helpless baby, the most helpless thing in the world, the most helpless human in the world. Now, if you want to sit there and make the argument, oh, it's not a human because you can't live outside. Yeah, okay, good. Make that argument. Maybe they should show a picture of what it looks like inside the womb when the baby's being slaughtered, because it's a woman's, but in the woman's body. But this was the baby in the womb. I mean, I think everybody at NBC, I thought they were all should have passed out. But the people on the set, they loved it. Even Al Roker, who's been there for, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years, whatever. It must be more than 30. And here you'll hear his voice in this too. Here's cut S3.
And this is what they saw. Do you want to guess what was on the left? So the left is a baby in its resting state. Okay. And then on the right, you see how he smiles 20 minutes. The mom ate some carrots.
Aww. On the left, would they?
There was just a resting state.
That was the resting, but he liked the carrots.
She had like a carrot pill.
So were there other foods?
Yes, there were other foods. I'm glad you asked. You want to look at this baby's reaction before? Mom had kale.
Wow.
So here's the thing.
What about if mom had ice cream?
I don't know.
Why would they go with
Let me
with
explain.
Carrots and vegetables?
So the study's co-author says the images could just show muscle movements when a baby's reacting to maybe a flavor that's bitter.
wow, when a baby muscle movement, when a baby's reacting, baby in the womb. Wow. Do they know what they did? I mean, they cannot have known. They had no clue. It didn't dawn on them that they're taking the radical left's argument and the right for a woman to, you know, to make decisions of her with her body. Yeah, you could. You want to get a tattoo? You want to get an ear piercing? You want to dye your hair? Go ahead. You want to have your finger cut off? Be my guest. But when it's the baby's body that you're sticking the knife in, it's a different story. Wow. I'm just blown away by that. And somebody right to life, people. Come on. Susan B. Anthony list and all you people out there and all you pro-life organizations, show this and show it often, please. All right. I'm going in order here. Probably shouldn't, but I am. So Donald Trump was on Sean Hannity's show on Wednesday night on Fox News Channel, and they played some more of the interview that we didn't see yesterday tonight. But this was from the first part of the interview. Just a very strange statement for Trump to make. I thought he conducted himself well. He was composed in reacting to the lawsuit filed by the New York State Attorney General when the interview began. And, I thought he made a good case for his innocence and all that kind of stuff and how she ran on the platform of getting him like a chief law enforcement officer in a state should run on. I'm going to get that guy. OK. But he talked about the raid. He talked about the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And here's what he said. This is via Mediaite.com. It's S4.
I would say there's a very good chance that a lot of those documents will never be seen again. There's also a lot of speculation because of what they did, the severity of the FBI coming and raiding Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace? Were they looking for the spying on Trump?
You don't say
Trump's?
You had it. No.
They may be saying they may have thought that it was in there.
Okay.
And a lot of people said the only thing that would give the kind of severity that they showed by actually coming in and raiding with many, many people is the Hillary Clinton deal, the Russia stuff, or... I mean, there are a number of things. The spying on Trump's campaign. So they spied on my campaign. So why did they come in and do that?
So he's saying, I don't know how he would think, why he would think, even Hannity interrupted and said, wait, did you have him? Why would they think that he somehow printed up Hillary's emails? The ones that she destroyed? I mean, you never destroy them fully. Or that maybe they weren't destroyed. I don't know. I don't know where he got that from, to be honest with you. That's kind of bizarre. Or documents on the Russia investigation, you know, communications maybe between FBI agents or things that the Mueller investigation found out that maybe weren't made public. I don't know. I don't know where he's going with this. And maybe nowhere because it's Donald Trump. It may mean nothing. But I don't know. It sounded like he brought that up for a reason. I can't figure it out. I don't think Sean was able to figure it out. And I didn't get it, but no, who knows where those emails went? Although if you listen to the head of the FBI at the time, when he announced right before the 2016 election that Hillary, you know, probably violated, I'm paraphrasing here. I don't remember exactly what he said, but that she probably violated the law, but no prosecutor would bring the case. Gee, I wonder why. He said that most likely our adversaries had seen those emails because it was kept on a private server in our basement. And that's, you know, you don't have to come and find the documents. You just hack it. And he said that it was likely that they were hacked. So I don't know where Trump was going. OK, I want you to listen to something. This is Dan Abrams, who, by the way, is the founder of Mediaite.com. He also has a show on News Nation. And this is on the site, the Mediaite site. And he's speaking with John Kirby, and he is the National Secretary Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, National Security Council coordinator for Strategic Communications. You've seen him. And they're talking about wokeness in the military. Now, there are a million examples that we have all heard about of wokeness in the U.S. military. So let's listen to how this conversation went. This is cut 50. I'm sorry. S5.
Some on the right have suggested that it's the administration's policies, right? It's the requirement of the vaccine. It's the, quote, woke policies in the military that's leading less people to want to join. What do you make of that?
There's no indications of that. First of all, it's a bogus claim. There's no wokeness in the military.
Remember that. I will get to that. I will get to that. Now, what they're talking about here is a report that the military is having trouble meeting its levels of enrollment. It's an all-volunteer, a military that we have in the U.S. There's no draft, and that they're falling short in their numbers. So you heard Abrams ask about, is wokeness keeping people away? And he says there is no wokeness in the military. Remember that one. Here's cut S6.
The military is, by and it should be, a diverse organization. We're supposed to represent and defend all Americans. And our diversity, and I've seen this myself firsthand aboard ships at sea, the diversity of the United States military makes us stronger, it makes us smarter, helps us make better decisions. There's no wokeness. They're driving a stake through a straw man. And we've seen no indications that culture concerns like that are having an impact on recruiting.
Okay, good. So you know why, first of all, you know why people are staying away? You speak to the people who do not enlist? How do you know that the wokeness is having no impact on recruiting? Well, you say there is no wokeness, but let's say there's some wokeness. How would you know that it has no impact? Unless, did you do a poll of people who are not enlisting and ask them why? Maybe they did. But listen to this one. Now, this report just came out, not meeting their goals and all that. But already, forget wokeness. There's no wokeness in the military. But he has something that might be affecting enrollment into the military. Here's S7.
I'll tell you what might have an impact on retention is the Dobbs decision with respect to abortion. I mean, there's a RAND study out recently that 40% of military women now might have to make a tough decision about whether they can stay in the military thanks to this decision. So that's what's driving some of our retention problems.
Oh, well, there he's talking about retention, people leaving. Oh, so that decision came down. That decision came down a couple of months ago. That decision came down a couple of months ago. And that everybody's left in a couple of months. No, this is a much deeper problem. But I want to read you. And I did my little feature called Give Me a Minute, which you might hear during the course of the day on here on TNT Radio. The story on Fox is Air Force Academy diversity training tells cadets to use words that include all genders. Drop the terms mom and drop the terms dad. Also, Air Force Academy tells cadets to be color conscious instead of color blind, whatever that means. Here's the deal. This is diversity and inclusion training by the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado. Cadets have been instructed to use words that include all genders. Refrain from saying things like mom and dad. It's a slide presentation. It's called Diversity and Inclusion, What It Is, Why We Care, What We Can Do. It advises cadets to use person-centered and gender-neutral language when describing individuals. Quote, some families are headed by single parents, grandparents, foster parents, two moms, two dads, etc. Wait, they just used mom and dad, didn't they? Consider parent or caregiver instead of mom and dad. The presentation says also use words that include all genders, folks or y'all instead of guys, and use partner instead of boyfriend or girlfriend. And then the whole color thing, too, which I'm not going to get into right now. There's no wokeness in the military. God help us. Really, 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 really. God help this country. Now, before we go to break, I want to let you hear the despicable Ana Navarro. Ana Navarro, Rhino Republican. She's on The View a lot, but she's also on CNN. And this is via Mediaite. They're talking about Ron DeSantis. She's on a panel with another gentleman whose name is Abraham Enriquez. Abraham Enriquez. Okay. He's the president of an organization called Bienvenido. I don't know much about it, but that it's not really all that germane to what you're going to hear. So here he is weighing in after she trashes DeSantis and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Here he is saying basically the opposite. This is S8.
Listen, I want to first start off by saying that as a first generation Mexican-American, I'm very sympathetic to what's going on at the border and the lives of the migrants. As Anna mentioned, just coming to our U.S. border is a miracle within itself if they survive to make it to our U.S. border. However, this talk of a lawsuit really to me sounds like election year political theater. Look, what the governor did was offer transportation for migrants who were homeless and needed refuge. And it was voluntary based. Right. The governor's office has released the waivers both in English and in Spanish. But the frustration that we're hearing from, people in Texas, specifically South Texas, is how the media is making this a big deal just because it comes from a wealthy city like Martha's Vineyard, when hardly no conversations being had of Tucson, Arizona, El Paso, Brownsville, Harlingen, Eagle Pass, which, by the way, we don't get 50 migrants a day. We get thousands.
All right. So there you have, you heard what he had to say. Now listen to what Ana Navarro says back to him, which is really disgusting and maybe beyond. I'll talk more about it in a second. Here's S9.
Frankly, Abraham, I don't know how you as a Mexican-American, and I don't know how you can with a straight face say that what the governor was simply offering was transportation. Please don't be so cynical. It's a little early in the morning. You know damn well that it was much more than that. Yes, he's trying to bring attention to the crisis on the border, and he's trying to do it through a political stunt by sending these two blue states, blue cities. Let's call it what it is. It is a political stunt. And please don't use your Hispanic last name to come on here and try to, justify this as just offering transportation.
Who the hell does she think she is? I'm sorry. That's racist. I mean, who the hell does she think she is? Don't you come on here and use your Hispanic last name? What? In other words, if you're Hispanic, you got to think like me, Mr. Hispanic. Who is she? What is she? I think that's as racist as it gets. Don't come on here using your Hispanic last name and disagree with me and stick up for Ron DeSantis. Who do you think you are? Like, who do you think you are? But this is acceptable. This is fine. See, all Hispanics are supposed to think one way. All blacks are supposed to think one way. If they don't, I've heard every name in the book. Uncle Tom, Aunt Jemima, right on down the line, cartoons of Condoleezza Rice, of her as Aunt Jemima. There were at least one or two that I saw and I remember talking about on the air at the time. Clarence Thomas and so many more conservative blacks are called every name in the book. It's disgusting. It's racist. It's outrageous to think that one group should all think alike. Don't come on here using your Hispanic last name. Wow. Wow. It's made worse by the fact that she's Hispanic. All right. We're coming back. That means don't go anywhere, folks. That's another way of saying stay where you are. I'm from Brooklyn, baby. Remember that. I am. Steve Malzberg here on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Who says politicians can't keep their campaign promises? In an apparent attempt at matching the record of President Donald Trump, who kept virtually every campaign promise he made from the time he came down the escalator to the time he raised his right hand and took the oath of office, racist New York Attorney General Letitia James is trying to keep her campaign promises too. You might recall that James, while seeking the office that in New York State is typically seen as a stepping stone to the governorship, promised to go into work, sue Donald Trump all day, go home at night and come back the next day and do it all over again. She even went so far as cooing in the ear of a prospective constituent who asked if James would sue Donald Trump for her. Oh yes, I'm gonna sue Donald Trump. I'm gonna be a pain in his ass. Well, she's doing it again, folks. James brought yet another lawsuit against the president, his children, and his companies. This has got to end. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
You better lock up your sons when the ex-girls hit town. We're an irresistible force. We have the power to get whatever and whoever we want. Let's go. Time to find somewhere hot. We cut through the traffic. No one can stand in our way. Wait there. Don't move a muscle. The paramedic said. Well, the driver said I just ran out in front of him. I can't remember anything, but I've been told I'll be on crutches for a while, and my miniskirt-wearing days are over.
Too much alcohol makes you feel invincible when you're most vulnerable. At least 77% of pedestrians killed in road accidents at night had been drinking. Alcohol. Know your limits.
This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. See, you stayed. Thank you very much. Every one of you listening right now that was listening during the break, before the break, has stayed. I like that. Congratulations. Thank you very much. Okay, so let's get to this. CNN announced what they're calling a shakeup. Now, I don't know how many people out there know the CNN lineup. Whenever I talk about CNN, I have friends who say, oh, you're the one who watches them? And I always say, well, somebody has to. Well, look, CNN had new ownership, new management come in, and they talked about how Chris Licht is the guy in charge now. And he was going to reportedly, you know, he wanted to become more straight news like CNN used to be and, you know, have both sides and blah, blah, blah. And all he's doing, for the most part, all he's done and all he's doing, he got rid of, as far as I know, I mean, he says he quit, but let's one way or another, Jeffrey Toobin, the masturbator, is gone. He was a legal analyst for years. He got caught masturbating on a Zoom call for a magazine that he worked for. He got suspended from CNN. Then they brought him back and now he's gone. Okay. Since new management came in, he says he quit. He was leaving. So he's gone. Brian Stelter, the host of Reliable Sources, the media show every Sunday, he was let go. They canceled his show. But that's really the only personnel that are gone. What they've done now is just taken the same radical left-wing lunatics that make up CNN's talent and shuffled them around. That's all he's done. These are the new changes. So if you're aware of CNN's talent, you'll appreciate this. If you're not, bear with me. Jake Tapper, who was doing 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, is moving to primetime, at least through the midterm elections. Okay, Tapper will anchor the 9 p.m. slot immediately following Anderson Cooper. That'll last through November 11th. John Berman and Brianna Keeler, who make up the team in the morning that nobody watches. I mean, they often don't break a 500,000 people on CNN. CNN, not a 500,000 people. So they have a new morning show, which I'll get to in a second. They announced that, and they said that John Berman and Brianna Keeler, who are now there, would do something else. I thought they'd become janitors for the company, but I guess not. They're now going to take over Jake Tapper's 4 p.m. Eastern time slot, but for 1 hour. He's currently doing 4 to 6. They'll do 4 to 5. The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, which is now on from 6 to 7, will expand to 5 to 7. Allison Camerota, who came from Fox years ago and is really a big liberal, who does 2 to 4 now with a co-host, will co-anchor with Laura Coates, another flaming liberal, and they'll do 10 to noon. That slot is currently being held down by Don Lemon. Lemon, of course, is going to wind up as the co-host of the new morning show. He was doing 10 p.m. He's now going to do the morning show with a couple of co-hosts. Poppy Harlow is one of those co-hosts. She was doing 10 a.m. Now she's moving to 6 to 9 a.m. with Lemon. And Caitlin, whatever her name is. This is crazy stuff. It's that all he's doing is taking the same talent that nobody is watching and putting them in different day parts. These leftists, miserable looking. Nobody looks like they're more unhappy and miserable than Poppy Harlow. She always looks like she's in pain while she's sitting there. No smile, miserable. And Allison Camerota, God bless her, dumb as a doornail. Lemon, radical leftists as they come. They're all leftists. Everyone I've just mentioned. So I don't get this at all. I don't understand it. So let me give you some stuff here. This is Don Lemon from a few nights ago, actually on the 13th of September. This video came out the other day. Talking about the Queen and royal reparations for that the British Empire owes to other countries. And Hillary Fortwich, royal commentator and global business consultant, was on with Don Lemon. So listen to cut number S10.
And then you have those who are asking for reparations for colonialism, and they're wondering, you know, $100 billion, $24 billion here and there, $500 million there. Some people want to be paid back, and members of the public are wondering, why are we suffering when you are, you know, you have all of this vast wealth? Those are legitimate concerns.
Okay, which leads Hillary, now get ready, to say this, cut S11.
Well, I think you're right about reparations in terms of if people want it, though, what they need to do is you always need to go back to the beginning of a supply chain. Where was the beginning of the supply chain? That was in Africa. And when that crossed the entire world, when the slavery was taking place, which was the first nation in the world that abolished slavery? The first nation in the world to abolish it. It was started by William Wilberforce, was the British. In Great Britain, they abolished slavery. 2,000 naval men died on the high seas trying to stop slavery. Why? Because the African kings were rounding up their own people. They had them on cages waiting in the beaches. No one was running into Africa to get them. And I think you're totally right. If reparations need to be paid, we need to go right back to the beginning of that supply chain and say, who was rounding up their own people and having them handcuffed in cages? Absolutely. That's where they should start. And maybe, I don't know, the descendants of those families where they died in the high seas trying to stop the slavery, that those families should receive something too, I think, at the same time.
Wow. Wow. Now listen to how Don Lemon reacts. He sat there and just looked, had this dumb look on his face. And this is all he said to that, which was, you know, very controversial to say that to a leftist, a black man, a leftist. Wow. And here's how he reacted. Here's cut to S12.
It's an interesting discussion, Hillary. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We'll continue to discuss in the future.
That was it. He went to commercial. The end. Wow. Now, I don't know if he refrained because of, you know, the new boss, which apparently is the same as the old boss. I didn't make that up, as you know. Or he was just wasn't paying attention and didn't listen to what she said, which is always a possibility. You never know. He might have said, oh, man. Thinking, did I leave that oven on when I left the house? You know, who knows what goes through the minds of someone in the chair asking the questions while the answer is being given. You never fully know for sure. But that went super, super, duper, duper viral for two reasons. What Hillary said, and she makes a lot of valid points, and the way Don Lemon reacted. Wow. But CNN, again, imagine, new management comes in, We're going to go back. We want to go back to being news. Da 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 da. You got all leftist people working for you. It's a leftist. Nobody watches it. So you keep the same people and you put them in different day parts? What is that? I don't get that at all. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you for being out there. Tell your friends. Follow me at Steve M. Talk. And I'll be back tomorrow, God willing, same time. I'm Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.